This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for May 2014. As twilight ends, the constellation of the heavenly twins Gemini is setting over in the west. And fairly close to the horizon, down to its lower left, is the star Procyon in Canis Minor. Moving towards the south, we pass through the constellation of Cancer, with the rather nice beehive cluster M44 at its heart. Very good with binoculars. And then, in fact, we come to Leo the Lion, fairly high, somewhat west of south. Its brightest star is Regulus, the King Star. There's some very nice galaxies that lie low over to the left of Regulus, can be picked out with a small telescope or even binoculars from a very dark site when there's no moon. Further over still, a bright star Arcturus, yellowish star, which is in the constellation of Bootes. And up to its left, a little circlet of stars, Corona Borealis. And then we come to Hercules, four stars making up what is called the Keystone. Two-thirds of the way up the right-hand side of the Keystone, with binoculars or a telescope, you'll see a little fuzzy blob. That's the globular cluster M13. Then rising over in the east is the bright star Vega in the constellation of Lyra. Down in the northeast, you may spot Deneb in Cygnus. These are the stars that make up the summer stars that will be more visible later during the year. Down below Bootes and Arcturus, we have some fairly faint constellations. We have obviously Virgo with its bright star Spica. To its lower left, Libra, the scales, the Serpens Caput, and even quite a large constellation below Hercules called Ophiuchus. Not many people know about that constellation. In fact, the Sun spends more time in Ophiuchus than some of the other constellations, but would you like to be an Ophiuchan rather than a Sagittarian or Scorpio? What about the planets? Well, in fact, we can see all of the unaided eye planets this month. Jupiter has had a lovely run very high in the sky in Gemini. As May begins, it's still at an elevation of 45 degrees in the western sky an hour after sunset. It sets about 1 a.m. British Summer Time. It's obviously now past its best and fading from magnitude -2 to -1.9 during the month, whilst its angular diameter shrinks a little from 35 to 33 arc seconds. And by the end of May, it'll only be 20 degrees above the horizon after sunset and sets around 11 p.m. So best to look at it as early as you can in the month. It lies in the constellation Gemini, starting the month 2 degrees north of the fourth magnitude star Mecbuta, which is Zeta Geminorum. Now moving eastwards across the sky towards Castor and Pollux, passing within half a degree north of the star Wasat Delta Geminorum on May the 22nd. And obviously with a small telescope, you can observe the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. And at times, you might be able to pick up the great red spot, visible as an indentation of the south equatorial belt. Saturn. Well, Saturn comes to opposition when it's roughly due south around midnight, UT, on May the 10th. So this is the best month to observe it. It rises just after sunset and sets basically just before sunrise. Lying in Libra, which is fairly low, sadly, in the sky, it's shining with a magnitude of +0.1. The disk has a diameter of 18.6 arc seconds and the rings about 40 or so arc seconds across. It began its retrograde motion across the sky in March and is now moving slowly westwards in Libra towards the star Alpha Librae. The rings are now opened out to about 22 degrees, so they make a magnificent sight. And if the seeing is good with a small telescope, you should be able to spot Cassini's division that lies between the A and the B rings. And sadly, over the next few years, Saturn gets lower and lower in the ecliptic, and hence lower and lower above the horizon in our sky. Mars, following its opposition last month, Mars is now receding rapidly, so will dim from magnitude minus 1.2, fairly bright in fact, to minus 0.5 during the month. I spotted it just above the full moon last night, in fact, before I recorded these notes. It was really very obvious. As it does so, its angular size will shrink from 14.5 down to 11.8 arcseconds. So again, try and observe it early in the month if the weather allows. It halts its retrograde motion westwards in the sky, so in fact it's now moving rather slowly relative to the stars, staying very close to Gamma Virginis, or Porrima, in the constellation of Virgo. Again, not that high in the sky. Best seen at about 11 p.m. as May begins. Mercury has probably its best apparition in the evening sky this year. At the start of May, it's very low above the horizon in the twilight, but as each evening follows, it appears a little higher in the sky. Perhaps May the 16th to the 28th will be the best time to observe it, when it will be about 15 degrees above the northwestern horizon at sunset, and still about 10 degrees elevation in the latter part of twilight. On May the 25th, at greatest elongation, it will set nearly 2 hours after sunset, and will shine at magnitude plus 0.4, with its 8 arcsecond crescent disk being about 40% illuminated. At the end of May, it will still be more than 5 degrees above the horizon an hour after sunset, but its brightness will have faded to just plus 1.2. Finally, Venus. Well, Venus, shining at magnitude minus 4 during the month, lies in the southern part of Pisces, and will be seen about 12 degrees above the eastern horizon half an hour before sunrise, its disk now showing a gibbous phase as it moves somewhat beyond the sun, drops in angular size from 17 to 15 arcseconds, but at the same time, the percentage of the disk which is illuminated increases from 67 to 77%. As a result, the effective area reflecting the sun's light stays almost constant, and there's only a drop of 0.1 magnitudes in brightness during the month. Well, what about the highlights? Well, let's start with a little bit more about the planets. Mars reached opposition last April. At the beginning of May, it still shines at magnitude minus 1.2, and its angular size of 14.5 arcseconds still makes it well worth observing. Due to the fact that Mars, and to a lesser extent the Earth, have elliptical orbits, its distance from us at opposition can vary quite substantially from 54 to 102 million kilometres. As a result, the angular size varies from 13 to 25 arcseconds at opposition, quite a big difference. At the moment, the angular size at opposition is increasing and will reach 18.6 arcseconds in 2016, May, and 24.31 arcseconds in July 2018, and that's pretty good. Sadly, again, it's getting somewhat lower in the ecliptic, so its elevation isn't that high. Obviously, Saturn reaching opposition on the 10th of May means it's the best month, really, to observe it, shining with a magnitude of about plus 0.1, surrounded by the beautiful ring system extending about 43 arcseconds across. To find it in the sky, follow the arc of the plough's handle downwards to first find the orange star Arcturus, and then continue down to find the white first magnitude star Spica in Virgo. Saturn, a little brighter than Spica and somewhat yellowish, lies down to its lower left in the constellation of Libra. Binoculars, and certainly a small telescope, will enable you to spot Saturn's brightest moon, Titan, at magnitude 8.2. Obviously, a small telescope will show the rings quite beautifully. In early May, it's still worthwhile to observe Jupiter. Obviously now well past opposition, but because it's at the highest part of the ecliptic, it will still be high in the sky just after sunset. The features seen in the Jovian atmosphere have been changing quite significantly over the last few years. For a while, in fact, the south equatorial belt vanished completely, but it's now returned to its normal wide state. And there's a diagram on the night sky page that shows you the main features. Well, what about other highlights? Well, first of all, during May, it may be possible to spot a rather nice comet. It's C/2012-2K1, Pan-STARRS, because it was discovered by the same system that discovered comet Pan-STARRS that we all watched last year. It's passing below the plough, shining at magnitude 7 or 8, which means that binoculars on a dark night should pick it up. I have put a star chart showing the trajectory of the comet below the plough on the night sky page, and there are some obvious times to look for it. On May the 1st and the 2nd, it's just to the right of the left-hand star in the plough's handle. On the 18th and 19th, it lies very close to Chi Ursa Majoris. And on the 26th and 27th, it lies adjacent to Psi Ursa Majoris. So if you can find those stars, then in fact you should be able to spot the comet in the same field of view of a pair of binoculars. On May the 6th, before dawn, you may see some of the meteors related to the Eta Aquarid shower, looking southeast well before dawn. You need a good low horizon, and you might see up to 10 meteors per hour from our northerly latitude. Happily, the moon, which is around first quarter, will have set, so that will not hinder our view. These meteors, the Eta Aquarids, result from dust particles that were released from Comet Halley in an eruption as it neared the sun some 4,000 years ago. Well as that, I have some days shown with little star charts on the night sky page when the particular planets come close to a moon. May the 3rd and 4th, Jupiter and a thin crescent moon. May the 11th, Mars and a waxing moon. And May the 30th, Mercury and a very thin crescent moon. Nice times to look for them, because if you find the moon, which is easy, you can easily find the planet. So I do hope, although the nights are not
Thanks
as long,
for that, Ian.
You'll have some
and
good observing during May.
For Southern Hemisphere listeners, here's John Field with the Southern Night Sky.
Welcome to the May Jodcast from Carter Observatory, Wellington, New Zealand. This month sees Orion the Hunter low in the west. A line of three bright stars forms his belt. To Māori, these three stars form part of the bird snare. Either side of these three stars, we see Rigel, a blue star, marking one of his feet, and on the other side, a red star, Betelgeuse, marking one of his shoulders. Above the belt, a faint line of stars forms his sword. The middle star of the sword appears fuzzy, and this is the famous Great Nebula in Orion. Binoculars and small telescopes will reveal a hazy cloud with a bat-like shape. This is a region of star formation about 1,300 light-years away, and it makes a beautiful sight in large telescopes. To some Southern Hemisphere sky watchers, the belt and sword form an asterism called the pot, or the saucepan. Orion will set soon after the sun. Following Orion is Sirius, which marks the head of one of his two hunting dogs. Sirius is nearby to our solar system, about 8.7 light-years away, and it is 26 times brighter than our star, the sun. Commonly called the dog star, it is the brightest star in Canis Major, the large dog. To Māori, it is Takarua, the winter star. To Egyptians, it is Sophis, and its dawn rising heralded the annual floods down the Nile Valley. Below Sirius and fainter is Procyon, the eighth brightest star in our night sky. It marks the lesser dog. Its name means before the dog, as in the northern hemisphere, this star rises before Sirius. Like Sirius, Procyon has a white dwarf companion, but it is difficult to observe. Throwing a line from Rigel and past Betelgeuse, we find Jupiter and two bright stars marking the heads of Gemini, the twins. Castor is 52 light-years away, and Pollux is closer at 34 light-years away. The planet Jupiter is a very bright star sitting in this constellation. As the largest planet in our solar system, Jupiter will always show a disk when observed through a small telescope. Under good conditions and high magnifications, bands and belts may be seen on the planet's disk. You should be able to observe its four largest moons performing their dance around Jupiter with a pair of 7x50 binoculars. Rising in the east are the constellations of Scorpius and Sagittarius. By late evening, they are both well above the horizon and are host to a number of beautiful and interesting objects. In the south, Crux, the Southern Cross, and the Pointers are now high overhead in our evening sky. Nearby to Beta Crucis is a cluster of stars called the Jewel Box. Visible as a hazy star, this cluster makes for a pretty sight in binoculars. More detail will be seen when viewed through a telescope. Between Crux and Sirius running along the Milky Way are the constellations of Carina the Keel and Vega the Sails. And these include the Diamond and False Crosses that are not official constellations. They are asterisms. This region is also home to a large number of bright stars, clusters and nebulae, and some can be easily viewed with the unaided eye, and many more can be found in binoculars or telescopes. Eta Carinae is the brightest of these and covers an area of the sky larger than the Orion Nebula. This nebula surprisingly does not look as impressive as the Orion Nebula due to its sitting along the bright Milky Way. Binoculars reveal a region embedded with star clusters and glowing clouds of gas intertwined with dark lanes. Eta Carinae itself appears as a bright orange-coloured star. Visible in the north and eastern sky after sunset are the planets Mars and Saturn. Mars is near the blue-white star Spica, which is the brightest star in Virgo. It was closest to the Earth in early April and is now starting to fade and will appear smaller when viewed through a telescope as it moves further away from us. In Greek mythology, Virgo is the harvest goddess, and it is the second largest constellation. Sitting away from the bright band of the Milky Way, Virgo is home to many galaxies that are visible in medium to large telescopes. Following Mars is Saturn, appearing as a yellow star in front of the stars of Libra, the scales. It reaches opposition on the 10th of May. Around midnight on the 14th and 15th of May, we will see the almost full moon called Saturn. Visible with the unaided eye, this sight will be much more spectacular when viewed through a telescope. Autumn is one of the best times of year to observe the Aurora Australis, or commonly known as the Southern Lights. These beautiful lights are caused by the interaction of the solar wind and the Earth's magnetic field. An atmospheric aurora can be visible from southern parts of New Zealand, Australia, and South America. They can appear as a red glow along our southern horizon, but can also be seen as moving sheets or curtains of glowing red and green. The amount of activity on the sun, in the form of sunspots, coronal holes, and solar flares, will affect the visibility and intensity of any auroral activity. The sun has increased in activity so far this year, and with a number of powerful but unfortunate Earth-directed coronal mass ejections. A number of websites will give you real-time information and predictions of aurora, and are worth checking out regularly if you want to see if any activity is predicted. Venus is in our morning sky, but is now rising later each morning as it moves back towards the sun. Many thanks for listening to our Jodcast, and we hope you have clear skies and great observing.